Hi guys, so we are back. This is Lead Her Shift and I'm here talking to Karen all the way from London, and she's a fashion designer, but she's way more than that, and I can't wait to delve into the different layers to her, her different levels of experience, because she has loads, and what's her understanding of leadership in general. So I'll turn over to Karen, and my first question is going to be, tell me a little bit about you. Tell me a little bit more about all the things that makes up Karen. What does that look
goodness.
Like?
Oh, goodness me. gosh, so much. So I was a teacher. I was a teacher for 28 years. Wow. I taught dance. My degree is in performing arts.
Okay.
And I specialised in dance. So when I finished my degree, I did a little bit of, you know, teaching here and there. And then I thought, I'll go and get a qualification. We call it a postgraduate certificate in education. So I got that. And then I went into teaching, moved to London from my hometown in Oxfordshire, went into teaching, and then just kept teaching dance. Mixed school, girls' school. And then ended up in a boys' school. Mm-hmm. But by that time, I was a pastoral leader. So I was a head of house, which is someone, what can I say, with a link between the parent, the child, and the teacher.
Okay.
So if a child is unhappy, they can't learn. So our remit is to ensure that they are getting the best out of school by making sure that their home environment and outside environment all links together, you know?
Right.
So basically, it also meant that if things, you know, if they were getting into trouble, I was the person that they were brought to, that kind of thing.
Right.
I don't know what the equivalent would be in Barbados, but yeah, that.
Yeah.
So then I stopped teaching in 2015. Mm-hmm. I wasn't very well. I had a breakdown and I ended up leaving teaching and spending a couple of years working out what I wanted to do and also looking after myself.
Right.
I had always sewn. My mother from Barbados, my mother taught me how to sew when I was 15.
Yeah.
And I'd always sewn. So I'd always designed things and made things and when I met my partner and had my children, I made clothes for my girls and I always made clothes for myself. So it was second nature. Mm. So when it came to leaving teaching, I wanted to work out, at the time I was 52, I'm 58 now. So at the time I was 52 and I figured I'm going to be on this earth for a good 40, 50 years.
Right.
This is my plan. I don't know what the universe plans for me. This is my plan. And so I wanted to curate the rest of my life doing what I love. And what I love is sewing and designing and working with women and talking to women about our bodies and what we love. And yeah, a lot of stuff. I think that's a bit rambly, but yeah, that's basically what I do. But I also teach people how to sew.
Right.
I also teach in classes in schools about sewing and fashion and that kind of thing. What else do I do? I talk about menopause a lot because when I left teaching, I started menopause and it hit me like a ton of bricks. Mm. And I advocate for women embracing getting older and everybody having a conversation about aging and menopause, not just women when it happens to them.
When it happens, yeah.
Yeah, I feel that there's a lot of fear around stepping into menopause, or jokes if it's not actually happening to you. And I feel that the only reason we're scared about it is because people don't talk about it early enough. So there's that fear of the unknown.
So then I was just gonna pause you there and find out a little bit about what your thoughts are regarding generally the Black community. Because you mentioned that about aging, but I find generally in the Black community, we don't talk about a lot of things. we often we often tend to stumble into different phases of our life, especially as women, as girls, and leading into women, womanhood. We tend to stumble into puberty. We tend to stumble into all these different layers of ourselves. Was your thoughts on that generally in terms of why this these conversations don't happen?
I think often, I can't speak for the entire Black community, but I can speak from my experience. And my experience watching my mother is that she was in survival mode.
Right.
So often we are trying to live, you know, and trying to put food on the table. And these weren't necessarily conversations we have, because they weren't, we were talking about education. Education is a big thing.
Right.
And getting the right education, so training to be something that would make you a lot of money and give you some status, like, you know, doctor, lawyer, the usual, teacher as well. But when it comes to things like, and also there's that emphasis on the way that you look as opposed to the way that you feel.
Right.
So, you know, as we know, melanin rich means often we look a lot younger than we actually are. And so those things to do with feelings and anything that might mean people knowing about your business.
Yeah.
Is actually something that we won't talk about. I remember when I told my mother, finally told my mother that I was in therapy, paying someone to talk to them about my business, because that's how she saw it. She told my late aunt Monica, and my aunt Monica called me ostensibly to tell me off. I mean, she didn't, it wasn't as harsh as I'm making it sound, but she was basically saying, you have people you can talk to in your family. Why are you talking to a stranger and paying them? You know,
why are you putting it outside the family in a way?
And I think that does us. I think that does us as a community, and us as women, as never mind men. Well, I haven't even got onto that subject. A disservice.
You
know, but there's also the thing around finding a therapist that will understand you. I had a Black therapist, and when I started with her, I had no idea how important that would become. That was 4 years ago now. Five years ago now. But as I got deeper into my recovery, I would say that it was invaluable talking to someone who we started on the same level. So I didn't have to explain anything.
Right,
to
or any to nuances. That
point. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right, and colonialism and all that kind of stuff. I didn't have to explain, she just got it. So we could start and then move up together, as opposed to me having to kind of catch her up.
Yeah.
And I feel that's really important, that people of colour should have therapists who get them and understand our experience, share an experience.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
This is so interesting, because I feel like the more I speak to women, especially in more recent times, and the more I kind of hear different stories, it all comes down the same line in a sense. But let's circle back a little bit. So tell me about what is it that drives your passion for design and fashion design? And, you know, you talked about teaching about your body and how you feel and how that is linked in a way to fashion. Talk to me about that. What is it?
Well, I think that I've always been interested in fashion, and I was interested in trends, and I was interested in like seeing things in shops and thinking, oh, I can make that. Let's see if I can make that. I realized that I really like a challenge.
Right.
So I will make a lot of things based on, oh, I wonder if I could make that out of this fabric. And then once I've done it, I move on. That kind of thing. But also, when I was diagnosed with anxiety and depression when I left teaching, just before I left teaching. And so I actually, if you know anything about depression, you tend to lose the will to do the stuff that you used to love. So I didn't want to sew. And I wasn't interested in the way that I looked. And I wasn't interested in anything, actually. But leaving my full-time, very stressful job meant that I had the space to really look at what I loved in my life and what I didn't love in my life, and also to turn the spotlight on me. We spend a lot of our time, particularly women, we're taught to nurture and we're taught to care for other people. Yeah. So I'd spent under five decades. I'm the eldest of four. So, you know, being the eldest child, not looking after my mum, but being around when my mum split from my father, you have your partner and then you've got kids. All of that is about giving back and then teaching, giving back. So I didn't have the opportunity to really look at my own life. And when I went into therapy, as I said, and when I started, I did lots of things. I went into therapy. I got into meditation. I've always been someone who did a lot of stretching and yoga. I just took longer to do it. I developed a routine for myself, which meant that gave me some kind of grounding in the morning. And I started to notice that my relationship with fashion and clothing changed. So before I would, you know, I was making a salary. I'd go into a shop and drop several hundred pounds.
Just clones, yeah.
Because,
not think,
you know,
about
something
it,
new, something trendy. Of course, when I stopped teaching, I also didn't have that income. And I made a decision to, I didn't want to buy into fashion anymore because I wasn't interested in the way that I looked. But then when I started to come through this, I started to use the clothes in my wardrobe to make me feel good. So, for example, in that same year, my Aunt Monica passed away suddenly. She went in and out of hospital and then she didn't come out again. And I was the executor of her estate. So I had to look through all the stuff in her house, her flat, put it on the market, stuff like that. And when she went into hospital for the third and final time, I remember thinking, fantasizing about what a great niece I would be when she came out. Because even though she lived in London, I didn't see her that much. And there was a guilt and shame around the fact that I hadn't been the perfect niece. So I missed her. And I missed the relationship that we never had, the relationship that I'd made up in my head. So I had a couple of pieces of her jewelry and a couple of skirts, vintage skirts. And I found that when I was missing her, maybe it doesn't sound old. When I was missing her, I would reach for something that she'd worn because it made me feel like she was with me. And I started to notice that I called it "Where You're Happy." So yes, I would talk about on social media. So I would choose clothing to lift my mood. So for me, it'll be, I really like a nice lingerie set. Just for me, not to show anybody else. I really love color, clearly. I
You're always vibrant, I must say.
Anybody can do this. It's about what you love in your wardrobe. Often adulting is hard work, and often you get to a certain age, your body changes. You may or may not have had children. You might have a stressful job. The point is, you're always doing. The last thing you're going to think about is matching a top with a skirt or looking trendy or that kind of thing. And actually, when we get to certainly menopausal age or an age where you become the mother or the carer or that kind of thing, in the middle of that, we kind of lose ourselves. And fashion seems to be this kind of not very serious thing. So we have a uniform, which might involve a t-shirt and leggings if you're at home all the time, or you always end up wearing dark colors because we're told that they slim us, which they don't, by the way. Do you see?
Yeah.
So I decided to, whereas I feel that your wardrobe is a treasure trove. When you're little and you love dressing up, we lose that as we get older because we're told, we're told we have to look a certain way. My argument is, you shouldn't care. It doesn't matter what you look like. If you feel good, how is it anybody else's business what you're wearing?
Yeah.
Do you see? And so I feel that menopause freed me, and depression, freed me to not care what other people thought. And it means that every single thing in my wardrobe I love. And it might, I might look like an explosion in a paint factory, and I might look like slightly unconventional, but I wear these things because I love them. So these earrings are by a good friend of mine, a jewelry designer, and I love them because of the color, because they make a noise when I move my head, because they were made by my friend. This head wrap is a sarong that was given to me as a parting gift by my therapist, who I spent a long time with. So do you know what I mean? So it's about meaning, it's about texture, it's color, it's things that are close to your skin, it's memory, it's vintage. So many things in our wardrobe that we can turn to when we're feeling not so great.
Yeah.
And it, during lockdown, it's perfect because I am dressing every day. I don't dress up. I didn't dress up to come to talk to you. Every day, I dress as if I'm going to my studio or I'm going out.
But that's the thing, because, you know, we are in COVID now. And I mean, generally, like, persons kind of fit themselves in a box. But like now, we're COVID, and most persons are either working from home, or they always used to work from home, or they're now finding a new normal because they don't have a job, whatever the case may be. And like, why dress up? Like, why, you know, my question is like, why? Like, why?
Because
at the same time, like, why not?
You dress up for you. The problem is that in the past, dressing up, the actual term, the dress up is you're dressing up for somebody else.
Yeah.
But that's not my point. My point, if I walk around my house in my hoodie and my leggings, by 5 o'clock, I'm not feeling so great and I'm wondering why.
Yeah.
Whereas when I get up in the morning, I don't think, I never decide what I'm going to wear the next day.
Right.
I get up in the morning and my honest to God thought is, how do I want to feel today?
Yeah.
Do you see? So
That's so funny, Karen, because I feel like it's so funny. You say, how do I want to feel? Whereas most persons, I feel, get up, even if they don't plan it, they say, how do I feel? And they dress for how they currently feel, not how they want to feel.
Yes.
And I often, think that is a main point there, you know?
Yeah. And we often dress the way we feel.
Yeah.
Which means often if we are feeling like we don't want to show our body, or we're feeling like down, or it's raining outside, or we reach for dark clothes, or we reach for clothing that hides our body. We reach for clothing that maybe has holes in it because it's easy, because why not? No one's going to see me.
Yeah.
This is about, for me, it's about self-worth. Am I not worthy of looking my best for me?
Right.
I did not put on matching bra and knickers for you because you're not going to see it.
Yeah.
I put them on because I feel great when I put them on. And I feel that women in particular get a raw deal, full stop. But definitely when it comes to fashion in the past, I will say, because things are changing. Fashion psychology is certainly on the rise, and people are cottoning on to choosing clothes to lift their mood. I understand that. But I feel that because fashion is based on, let's face it, it's based on getting you to buy something. This is why there are seasons. This is why there are trends. They do not have your best interests in heart. They want you to part with your hard-earned cash. That's it. So, of course, you know, the seasons, the trend, in order to feel that you're relevant, they will want you to buy something that is a certain length or has a puff sleeve or this kind of thing.
Because you've got to keep up.
Right. But the other side to that is, it's not sustainable because we have, I was watching a program today. We have something called the Great British Sewing Bee, which is a competition for home sewers to find the best home sewer in Great Britain. And one of the challenges was about making clothes out of clothes. So making new, upcycling clothes, making new things out of old things.
Right.
And the statistic was that there are enough clothes currently on the planet to clothe six generations of people. The point being, we don't have to buy any more clothes because there's enough clothing. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
You, I guarantee that if you look in your wardrobe, you will find clothes that you haven't worn for years, or clothes that you can't fit into, or clothes that you bought and never wore. You know, we tend to reach for the same thing. If we want to look at our consumption, champion sustainable fashion, that's about shopping in your own wardrobe.
Yeah.
Looking at
shopping in your own wardrobe. I love that.
Yeah. Well, if you think about it, when you go to your wardrobe, the clothes in front of you, if you're right-handed, the clothes in front of you or slightly to the right, and if you're left-handed, slightly to the left, are the clothes that you always wear.
Yeah.
And so there will be clothes to the far reaches of your wardrobe that you don't really wear. I challenge you to take, I don't know, three items from one side and three items from one side and put them in the middle and wear those.
Yeah.
It's really, it's a fascinating.
It's simple,
I offer a styling service where I help clients to, before COVID, to look in their wardrobe and help them to send the stuff that they haven't worn for ages to charity shop, but also wear things in a different way and choose the clothes that they truly love so they can wear their happy, wear your happy style. And you'd be surprised, or maybe you wouldn't, how many items of clothing we have that we do not wear, or clothes that we wear because we feel we should, as opposed to because we like them.
I think that's more it. Clothes we think we should, because we might look a certain way or give a certain message, or people will accept us
better. That's about fitting in.
Yeah, it's more about fitting in, or more about how would other people see me if I wore this versus that, you know? And I think it's more about the should.
And it's not that we don't want to dress up. It's just that we feel, I think sometimes we feel that it's, I don't know, maybe not serious enough, or not, we won't be taken seriously.
Yeah. You
know? And this goes for men as well as women, but I focus on women because I'm interested in how we're expected to become smaller as we get older. But actually, we have more knowledge, we have more experience. Surely, this is when we need to be shouting from the rooftops. I'm here. I have the experience. I have this knowledge. I'm a relevant person. Just because I can't have kids anymore, I don't look a certain way, doesn't mean that I'm not relevant. Doesn't mean that I can't contribute. Doesn't mean that I won't add value to a situation.
Yeah.
So I think, certainly for me, menopause has liberated me. I'm much more, I'm me. I'm authentically me. And that sounds really, but it's true. It's true. I try not to do things that I don't love. I have a very small circle. I speak my truth. All these phrases, eh? I'm bringing them out, mate. Yeah, I'm full of it. I'm full of it, guys. No, but I try to only say what I believe in. I spent years not doing that. I spent years... I come across as quite a gregarious and extrovert person, and to some extent I am, but at work certainly I wouldn't speak my mind because I was so scared of being found out. Imposter syndrome, isn't it?
Right. Yeah.
You know, so I never did any of the things I could have said. Way.
Oh, but, you know,
I think it's time women, older women, stood up and reclaimed, you know, our power, because this menopause is a freeing if we put symptoms and the physical stuff aside and the bad stuff aside, the other side to that is actually it can be incredibly liberating and empowering, and it lasts for a long time. So the transition is can be celebrated. I think menopause is something to be celebrated, not to be feared. So start talking about it now, guys.
Just so everyone is aware, for all those people in the back.
Just in case you didn't, for the people at the back, yeah, just in case you didn't hear me. Yeah, it's the thing.
Karen, do you think, I'm going to throw this at you and you can share your thoughts on this. Do you?
I'm worried now.
No, don't be worried. Do you think the anxiety and depression that you were diagnosed with is a burden of the leadership you had? The leadership role or position or...
Look at you! Okay, so there is a trope, the strong, I'm going to throw it at you, the strong black woman trope about not being able to show your feelings and carrying on anyway, getting up and carrying on anyway. I watched, and it's generational, so we watch our family often, but not always, the women in the family, perhaps from my point of view, my mother split with my father when I was 15, and I watched my mum just get up and get on with it on the whole. You know, don't get me wrong, she had a cry and she was upset, but on the whole, my memory of it is of her getting a job, putting food on the table, carrying on. She has four children. I was the eldest. I am the eldest, I mean. You know, decades later, I did exactly the same thing. When I split from my partner, my primary objective was to make sure my children were all right. So I put all my energies into making sure my job was secure. I put all my energy into my job and into my girls. So, and at some point, when we mask our feelings and when we don't attend to ourselves, that stuff's got to come out somehow.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
You know? And so my breakthrough, I want to call it a breakdown, but I broke up with my former self.
That's a good way to look at it. That's interesting.
I don't see it. We call it a breakdown, but it wasn't a breakdown. I am grateful to that time in my life. As traumatic as it was, it's brought me here in front of you.
Yeah.
On, you know, now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
I
feel that if we don't attend to ourselves and if we don't acknowledge that we need care as well and put ourselves first, then it can all go horribly wrong.
Yeah.
And so I've forgotten the question.
Oh dear.
But I feel that the feeling that we can't share our feelings, look after ourselves, feeling that looking after yourself is selfish in some way.
Yeah.
Means that we put other people first and we keep doing it and keep doing it until we're stopped in our tracks. And I was stopped in my tracks. The universe was like, right, you're not listening to me. Here, what? This is what we're going to do. Bish, bash, bosh. You know? That's what I think anyway.
Yeah, but you summed it perfectly, because often the burden of leadership, we interpret that the burden of leadership means that we aren't to put ourselves first at any point. We often think that leadership means, although we are supposed to be serving others, that leadership means we forget ourselves in the process, or we stop remembering that we are part of the process and we need to take care of ourselves at the same time.
And I feel that I would never have, if you'd have asked me a few years ago, are you a leader?
Yeah.
I would have been like, no, I'm just doing what I do.
Yeah,
I realize that I am and only I suppose recently in the last 2 years or so I've realized I am a leader, because yeah. I've always been someone who's like, I want, you know, if something isn't happening the way I want it to happen, or it's not happening at all, I'm like, I'll do it then. I may as well do it then.
Right.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
And I also realized that I like to get up and get on with things when something. Okay, so here's the thing. I have two daughters.
Yeah.
And my two daughters are 25 and 29. And they, on the whole, your children don't really take a lot of notice of what you say to them after a while. They yeah. listen to you up until like 10 or 11. Mm-hmm. And then they go to secondary school, and then they have their friends, and then they listen to their friends, and their friends become the most important. And that's why, guys, get to know your children's friends very well. Mm-hmm. So I could tell my child not to do something, but if I do not lead and show them,
right,
then they're not going to, I'm a hypocrite.
Yeah.
So when I finally went into therapy, what I was saying with my actions was, I know that I'm worthy, and that gives you permission to look after yourselves as well.
Mm.
And that was 5 years ago. Now I talk to my daughters as grown-ups, and these are conversations we have. It's about, if I could complain until the cows come home about how my job was stressful and I didn't like it and they're treating me a certain way, I can do that. But unless I did something about it, I could still be complaining and I could still be ill. I could have taken time off, gotten better, and then gone back to teaching.
Right.
But then I would just be complaining. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So the reason that I do what I do, whatever that might be, whether it's fashion design, whether it's sewing, teaching people to sew, whether it's talking about menopause, whether it's where you're happy, all that stuff, is because I want my girls to understand that if you're not happy with your life, then you have the power to change it.
Mm.
And these things don't happen overnight, but you can't be, what's the phrase? You can't be what you can't see.
Mm.
Can you? So if my girls saw me
That's
doing
it.
A job I hated until I died, then they would think they would have to do the same thing. I'm not happy
yeah.
enough with my girls. I want my girls to dream big. I want them to dream outside of my dreams, you know, because I want them to live a fulfilling lives. And if they don't, just because you don't see, I'm trying to think of an example. When I was young, I never saw any black, I didn't know any artists of color. I'd studied art, but I didn't know any artists of color.
Right.
Now, my youngest child is an artist, and she sees lots of artists on social media. We have friends who are artists. Do you see?
Yeah.
So I feel almost a duty to live my life as big as I can, so that I can enable not just my children to see that, but also people coming up, women who see me doing what I like at my age,
yeah,
they can feel that they can do the same thing. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does.
It sounds like rubbish.
No, it makes perfect sense. And recognizing that representation matters. It matters
Mate,
to how, yeah,
so
it matters,
much.
Yeah, it matters to how you see yourself. It matters to what you think you're capable of. You know, it matters.
And I would
to,
say, yeah. I would say, if you Google menopause and then click on images, see if black women come up. Because that's a thing of mine.
I never thought about that, you know, but yeah.
I did a campaign, a modeling campaign for a large...
see, you're a model
glasses.
Now.
spectacle wearers, darling.
Yeah.
Specsavers. It was a job, and I went along and I got the job. Now, what I didn't know was they were going to use my... I knew they were going to use my image, but they ended up putting my image on a leaflet to advertise their glasses that went through homes all throughout Great Britain and Ireland.
Wow.
So, of course, people start to tag me on social media because they're getting these leaflets coming through their door. My point is this. First of all, props to Specsavers for choosing that image, because there were other models there. They could have chosen something else. They chose to take my menopausal 58-year-old face and put it on leaflets. Now, that says a lot for that brand, but also it meant that people could see that older women can be models, older black women can be models.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah,
I feel like, what am I trying to say? I feel like it's important that the message gets out there that, you know, black folks are, we do lots of different things and are in all parts of society. And if modeling is my way of reaching those people, then so be it.
Yeah.
And the conversations I had with, you know, women who would send me messages, you know, got very excited about seeing someone who looks like them on a generic piece of paper that came through their door.
Yeah.
So it's really important that we step up and step out and not be quiet.
And I would add to that, not be afraid to do more than just one thing. Because I think it's one of those things where we, you know, I almost feel like we stay in just one lane or feel like we can only be in one lane and not, you know, and not do multiple things and enjoy.
But we're taught that. We're taught that, Alian. When I was at school, we had a careers advisor, and the careers advisor told me that I should get a job in a bank. And I laugh now because that's so far
from what I wanted to do.
So I know for a fact that my dad wanted me to be a doctor. But fortunately, he left the family home just before I took my options at school. So when I said to my mum, I really like dancing, I want to do a degree in performing arts, my mum was like, whatever makes you happy. And that set me on the path to do what I wanted. But the other side to that is my generation certainly were taught that you have one job, one career, and you stick to it.
One career,
So when I left teaching, two things happened. First of all, I floundered because when people asked me what I did, I was quite proud to say I was a teacher.
Mm.
But when I left, I was like, well, what will I be? I'd been a teacher for almost three decades. I couldn't work out what I could be. Then I floundered because I thought I had to choose one thing.
Right.
So when people say to me, oh, what do you do? Well, I do lots of things.
But
my title is a fashion designer and a sewing tutor. Actually, I'm so much more. And I feel that, you know, when young people coming up, young black folks coming up, whatever, they need to understand that you can do whatever you want to do. You can do lots of different things. You don't have to fit into a neat little box for people to label you, do you see?
Yeah.
And I have to say, I will, if I like it, if you ask me to do something, and you're going to pay me, it's something that is generally on the way. I have a vision for what I want to be doing in the next 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. Then I'm going to do it. If I think I'm going to have fun, I can try it once. That's how I fell into modeling, because someone said, oh, you know, would you go for a casting? I was like, oh, I've never done that. I'll do that. And then they said, oh, would you go for this photo shoot? And I was like, I've never done that. I'll do that. And the next thing, do you see?
Yeah.
We are in the habit of making ourselves small and narrowing ourselves because we're told, especially at school, that that's what we're supposed to do. But I say, do it all.
Yeah.
Do it all. Do as much as you can. Do it all. I'm excited to see what I'm going to be doing in the next few years. Also, I'm excited to see what, you know, my children and my children's friends, how they're going to evolve and step up. Because, you know, if this pandemic has taught us nothing, is teaching us that we have to swerve.
Yeah.
You know, I've swerved. I went from having private clients in my studio to making face covers. You know?
Right.
And that's my little bit of where you're happy going out into the world in colourful fabric.
Yeah.
But I feel that being adaptable and being open to new ideas and finding things out and evolving and help, that kind of helps you to find what you're good at and what you love and what your purpose is. And then, you know, there should be no stopping you.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I'm hearing so much, but I think one of the main things that is standing out for me, especially because there's two things. So in terms of leadership and how we lead and even seeing ourselves as leaders, it's almost like we have a perception, especially growing up, that in order to see ourselves as leaders, we must have a title, right? Mm-hmm. But part, in addition to that, part of leadership is knowing when to say yes and how much times yes is necessary in order to get different opportunities that help us to find what makes us happy. But knowing where we want to go enough that we must learn how to say no as well.
Yes,
because there are things. Yeah, so setting parameters for how much we do, what we do, when we do it, who we do it with, all those kind of things is, so for me, setting that kind of standard or foundation for yourself is part of leadership. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and I learned that the hard way.
Yeah,
because I went from, you know, 28 years of a salary,
right?
And being I'm being told what to do. I was told what to do. It's teaching. You have to fit within certain boundaries, don't you?
Yeah.
So when I went from that to freelance, I didn't know the first thing about business. Mm. Not a clue.
Yeah.
I didn't know how to price. I was scared. I didn't know how good I was at what I do. My God, I had no self-worth. Mm. Whenever somebody told me that they liked what I made, I, in my head, I was like, oh, well, they're only saying that because they're either related to me or my friend.
Right.
I didn't charge enough. So I did everything. So whenever somebody said to me, oh, you should make this, I'm like, oh, I'll make that. Hated doing it, but did it because I thought, oh, and I would lower my prices because I thought, oh, that means that otherwise they won't come to me.
Yeah.
I came from scarcity. So I would think that if somebody did something similar to me, that meant that it would take away from me. I'm not that person anymore, by the way.
Yeah.
And it took a lot of trial and error and also me setting boundaries that meant, and also that feeling of abundance, abundance mindset. Because I strongly believe that not only will I be fine, but I will thrive. And I thrive because the money will come.
Yeah.
And I thrive because I don't do what I don't want to do.
Right.
And I say no, but also that I say yes too. I read that book by, what's her name? Sonda Rhimes. No, Shonda Rhimes.
Shonda,
Shonda Rhimes. The Year of Yes. Or The Year of Saying Yes. Something like that. That's such a good book, man.
Yeah.
Such a good book. And what happens is you say yes to one thing and the next thing comes along and the next thing comes along and the next thing comes along.
It's almost like a domino effect.
Right.
Yeah.
But also when you step out, it's like the cartoon where they get to the cliff and then they step out and then something comes up and you don't fall. You don't, if you step into that kind of feeling of thinking you're going to fall, but actually you will be fine. If you believe you will be fine, you'll be fine. That was a long-winded way of saying, you know, to keep trying and keep going and just what's the worst that could happen. Can I just say, I'm very good at giving this advice, not so good at taking it, but I am aware of, And I am aware of sometimes feeling too scared to do things. But, you know, I have a good support network around me.
Yeah.
And I think everything happens when it's supposed to happen.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so.
That's it.
Yeah. Again, don't know what the question was, but hey, here we are.
You keep killing me. Was one piece of, because I heard a lot of things in terms of, you know, your unsurety of what, how to even build this business, what to even do, like what steps I need to take, how I need to price, all these different things. So for some professional out there who's now starting out, now trying to figure out, you know, their life and what they're doing and how what they're passionate about, what their purpose is, even how to grow in themselves more so than the business or the career that they have, like what's one piece of advice you would give them?
Oh, I mean,
do you have 10?
I don't know.
Yes, you do. You have loads of knowledge.
Okay. So I would say what I say to my girls, I say do what you love, but that's, I don't know whether that's business advice, because
it is, you know.
The thing is that you can say, this is interesting, because I've read lots of things and I've heard lots of advice, but also if you're not ready, you know, when you're not ready to hear something, you don't hear it.
Yeah.
So true. I've had said to me, and at the time I'm like, that's wrong. I remember hearing people say, oh yeah, do what you love and the money would follow. And I'm thinking, no, it won't. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And yet here I am. Do you see?
Case in point, right?
So I think I will say the best thing I ever did was outsource the stuff I hate. So I have a fear around numbers, which is funny, seeing as I measure things. But I have a fear around, it's a childhood thing about being rubbish at maths. I'm not rubbish at maths, I just don't like doing it. And I used to make myself feel physically sick having to do my tax return every year. And the year I decided to spend the money on an accountant, oh my God, accountants are amazing people because they do this. Like some people like to do their tax return or they don't want to pay for someone to do it. Fair enough. And I'm sure that if I put my mind to it, I could do it. But yeah. I also would get myself into such a state about it. It's not worth it. Pay the money. So if there's something that is causing you anxiety to the point where you're procrastinating or you're not doing it or you're worried about it, there are people out there you can pay, you know, and it is worth every single penny.
Yeah.
I would also say put your money back into your business. Even though when we make money and we get so excited and we don't want to spend it because you look at how much business cards cost and how much a website, hosting a website costs and all that kind of stuff. But the money's worth it. And I would also say, social media is not yours. If Instagram goes down tomorrow,
if WhatsApp
goes down tomorrow, where are your clients coming from?
Exactly. So
get your own website
and then
all your stuff, your blog, my website. I love my website, you know. I love my website because bottom line, all that social media stuff, the point is to drive it to my website. I have somewhere. So I'm not telling anybody to WhatsApp me.
That is it.
And I'm not telling anybody to, you know, what about all the people who were on MySpace? Or the people who are on Bebo?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If all those things suddenly stop working, at least you've got somewhere that is yours. That's mine. That's my copyright. That's, you know.
That's the thing.
Actually, that's my advice.
What people don't recognize is that's where you find your clients. That's not where you constantly meet them. Those are two different things. So you find them there, but you funnel them to you.
Yeah.
Right? This is so good.
And a newsletter. Sorry, I got one more thing. Get a mailing list.
Yes.
So get people somehow. I mean, I think my mailing list is small, but they're mine. You know, so if I really want to say something, I send a newsletter. Yeah. My goal is to actually send one out regularly, but we're not going to talk about that. But the point is, having clients that have signed up because they like what you do is invaluable. It's yeah. invaluable because you have a ready, captive audience.
Yeah.
Do you see?
Yeah.
So, you know, Instagram's great. I have, you know, Facebook's great. Twitter's great. All of that. But really and truly,
it doesn't belong to you, right?
It's not yours. It's yeah. not yours. Yeah. And if you can't, if you lose your password or you can't get in or they suddenly go, you know, belly up, you've still got, as long as we've got Wi-Fi, you've still got things that are yours, your blogs, your newsletter, your offering, whatever it is. The number of times people have said to me, have you got a website? I'm like, yep.
I do.
There you go. Boom.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. You know? And I will say, there are two... Okay, so 3 years ago, a blog came out, and it was the 50 top, well, the 25 top African tailors in London. No one was more surprised than me that I ended up on this list.
Nice.
I don't know whether it was brilliant because I just started. I don't know whether it was in any particular order, but I was number 16. Mm-hmm. But my friends were very excited about this. I was having difficulty kind of owning it, but hear me out. My point is this. I went onto that list and I clicked on every single one. You know, I did. I got to number 12 before I found someone with a website.
Mm.
So people were coming to me. I now have a thing where on my website, if you fill in a form, I ask you how you found me.
Right.
And it's still from that blog because it would, if you clicked on someone, it led to a number. It might lead to a landing page. Whereas right. I have, because I had a fully fledged website and the women loved the blog because I talk about, you know, issues that were pertaining to them. That's how I picked up my clients. Mm. So all this time I thought, oh, well, I'm number 16. People are going to just click on number one and number two.
Yeah, no.
Do you see?
No.
So it's an interesting... I've learned so much by getting it horribly wrong.
Mm.
And also, it's funny, I said about how you hear what you need to hear when you're ready to hear it.
Mm.
I would never have predicted that I'd be in the situation I'm in because I always had myself as not being a risk taker. So right. I thought I didn't take risks. So this is me deciding I don't take risks. The woman who left her job and left her partner. I mean,
those are huge. You know,
they're quite big.
Yeah.
They're quite a big thing.
Pretty big.
But I didn't want to fail. You hear those things about you have to, that, you know, it's not failing, it's a lesson. And
yeah.
that's absolutely true. But
yeah.
because I've always been a perfectionist, and I'm still working on that because it serves me, but it doesn't serve me at the same time.
Yeah.
It meant that I didn't want to fail. So I would move like this. When actually all the time I was failing, they were lessons.
Yeah.
And so you may as well just get on with it.
Yeah.
You know, because that will take you further and further and further to wherever you're meant to be, and it where you're meant to be might not be where you think you're going.
Mm.
I couldn't have predicted this.
That's the thing, you know, because you speak about failing, but from my perspective, failing is when you stop, and at no point did you ever stop. So for me, failing is more when you decide that's it and you don't do anything at all. So
that's
it's
so
almost
true.
Like you cut off your water flow. And the rest of the path is dry.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But you kept going. So there was, even if it was a little trickle, it's still some form of water flowing. So you didn't really
fail. And you got to look at the big picture.
Yeah.
And you got to look at the big picture. If I get up tomorrow and I don't do anything that I consider worthwhile, because obviously it's relative, that doesn't mean the following day I'm not going to.
Exactly.
This this, the fact that I'm not in my studio, and I, what I did is I moved my sewing machine and my fabric to my kitchen table just before lockdown was announced.
Right.
Hallelujah.
Which means that I've been able to continue to do my business, my new business, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Now I'm thinking my next step is about making my, letting my clients, current clients, know that how I'm going to navigate COVID, how I'm going to safeguard them and myself, how I move gradually back to my studio, but also what my offer is going to be, because I need, I'm thinking about the online, which I've been faffing about for months, that maybe I should actually get on with it, but also whether I'm going to continue making face covers, how I'm going to, do you see what I mean? So it's really made me kind of, when it first started, I was like, oh my God, how am I going to pay my bills? I'm not about to lose my house, all that kind of stuff. Now it's like, okay, okay, how are we going to take this forward? How am I going to take what I've learned and move it into the next year, 2 years, etc.? It's exciting, scary, but exciting too.
I think the internet, as scary as it can be, the internet, having the internet at this stage, at this time, with this pandemic and all that is happening in the world, is the beautiful thing about all that's happening in the world, because with just connectivity, even this podcast, this interview, we could do this, you know, and this is something that we couldn't, if this had happened, let's say 10, 15 years ago, it wouldn't be possible. So, I mean, I think we are in a beautiful space in the world where if you don't take the opportunity now, it more likely will pass you by.
I feel that, okay, I agree with some of that. But I also think that we must not forget that we are in unprecedented times.
Yes.
And we must remember that no one knows what's going to happen next. And that in itself is causing anxiety.
That's true.
So people are living with grief. They're living with shock. They're living with trauma. Some people are locked down with people they don't like. They might be on their own. That will be affecting their mental well-being. Mm-hmm. So I think, yes, there is the... See, I remember when it first kicked off and people on social media were going berserk. I'm going to learn a new language. I'm going to start a new business. I'm going to do this. Me, I was thinking, boy, I just want to get from day to day at the time.
Yeah.
Because I think it's really important that we put ourselves first and we put our mental well-being first and then move on. But there's a positive to seizing the day, but we need to look at the long haul. This is my personal opinion, but hear me out. Yeah. I can't be rushing around trying to do this, and this when in 2 months' time, that means I'm going to be burnt out.
Right.
Do you see?
Yeah.
So whilst there are things that we could take advantage of, the other side to that is, and I would say to anybody who goes into business on their own, because I used to think everybody could be a business person, you know. I used to think everybody could be freelance. I didn't think that it was something that was a big deal. Yeah. I now realise it's a massive deal and you do have to have certain skills.
Yeah.
And one of those skills needs to know how to look after yourself.
Right.
Because if I didn't put myself first, we wouldn't be having this conversation. I would have got another teaching job.
That's
what would have happened. And I wouldn't and been sewing on the side. Because I would, I don't do anything without making sure I've got this in place first.
Yeah.
And it means that I move more slowly and not physically.
Yeah.
It means that that my pace of life is slower, but it's much richer because I can appreciate the day. Actually, I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't love everything I do. Who likes answering emails and doing invoices and chasing people for money? I don't like doing that. It's not fun. But the bigger picture is I'm building my own little empire.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm leaving a legacy. And I'm reaching people in a way that I never thought would be possible.
Mm.
So I'm good.
Yeah, you man. Know.
I'm good.
Oh, Karen, listen, it's such always a joy. Honestly, it's such always a joy.
We should speak more.
Yes, I agree. We have so, I mean, I feel like even in this, there's so much more I could just take out and have a whole conversation about it. But just for this context and for this particular conversation, I just want to end by saying thank you so much.
Okay.
This has been an absolute pleasure. I feel like you bring so much different perspectives to the table and also a different spin with all your vibrance. And yeah, man, let's do this again at some point.
Yeah, man. I who would have thought when we met?
Yeah,
however
I know.
Long ago it was.
I know, man.
Sharing our roti.
Sharing our roti. Oh my goodness, memories.
Mate, I could murder a roti now. Boy, memories. I can't wait to get back to Barbados. I'm telling you, man.
Memories. But for now, no, that was leadership. You're welcome, absolutely. And let's catch up again next time.